This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. This weekend, Wisconsin Democrats will gather in Milwaukee for their state convention. To hear them describe it, there has never been more at stake in upcoming elections. Joining Newsmakers is Dem Party Chair Ben Wickler. He's going to talk about the convention agenda and all those challenges and opportunities ahead for Democrats. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on, Lisa.
So I know you're gathering this Saturday, June 8th, Potawatomi Casino Hotel in Milwaukee, continues through Sunday. What are you most looking forward to about convention time?
Our convention's theme is fighting for our freedoms, and the energy around the fight for freedom for Wisconsinites is so high, especially in this moment when the gerrymandered maps are gone, so voters can help. The same voters can cast votes in five major elections at once: state assembly races, state senate races, congressional races, the U.S. Senate race for Tammy Baldwin, and a vote for President Biden to defeat President Trump. And having all of those at once, it's like a five-layer cake of democracy, and that has got everybody fired up.
Never happened before in that way, would you say?
I don't know of a time. I mean, this is a big bang sea change moment in the state legislature in a way that I think is without precedent in the state, going from the most extreme partisan gerrymander in the country to fair maps. And people have been working for years to make that happen. And then all these other races at the same time, so important. So there's all these different things that bring people to the table. And what's exciting is you get to work on all of them at once.
At a convention, packed into 2 days.
Packed into 2 days.
So you mentioned fighting for our freedoms as
yes.
The theme. What does that mean?
So start with the freedom to make your own decisions about your own body. This question of abortion bans, we just experienced what it was like to have every abortion provider stop abortion care in our state. It was a disaster. And now, as litigation moves through the courts, people can access abortion care again. But until we pass a law to protect the right to access an abortion, we're one bad election away from an abortion ban snapping back into place, or Republicans imposing one at the federal level. So that is elemental this year. There's also the freedom to be part of a democracy where voters choose their leaders. And that is very much in question. It's been a singular focus by Republicans in our state legislature, aided and abetted by Donald Trump, who tried to overturn the last election and would like to rig things so he can stay in power forever. Those stakes are really stark. And then you get to the sort of broader conception of freedom, like FDR laid out in the Four Freedoms speech 100 years ago, almost. The freedom to work and have a job with dignity and be able to retire with dignity. The freedom to know that your kid will come home safe from school and get a good public education. These freedoms to live the kinds of lives that most people would like to live in this country. All of those are on the line as well.
In the latest Marquette poll, they asked voters what are the issues most important to them. The economy comes in first, ranked at the top, 33%, followed by immigration, 21%, and then abortion policy at 13%, followed behind by Medicare, Social Security. Are those the same? You mentioned different issues other than abortion.
Sure.
Just now, and the freedom theme. Are the economy, immigration, and abortion policy the top three that you hear about when you're talking to voters?
Well, it depends on which voters you talk to. Everyone is furious about the cost of groceries, the cost of housing. We all want lower costs. And so on the economy, the question is who fights for lower costs for working, you know, middle-class Wisconsinites, and who supports jacking prices up to benefit the billionaires who own the biggest companies in the country. And on that, there's a very clear contrast. You have, you know, Senator Baldwin authored this legislation. President Biden signed into law to bring down the cost of insulin, for example. And with Donald Trump, he sides with the big drug companies every single time. So these questions around who's actually fighting for regular folks on the economy, who's walking on the picket line like President Biden, that's where we see the battle on the economy in this election. On the border, you had a bipartisan immigration plan that Republicans and Democrats agreed on, a tough and fair plan that then Donald Trump shot down because he wanted a problem that he could run on instead of a solution that would benefit people. Then you get a question like abortion, and it is so personal for so many people. So many people have experienced a pregnancy that went wrong, and they needed to get care. Someone they love had that experience. And the question of whether a politician should be making that decision, intruding on the private medical decisions of families, or whether this is a question, these decisions should be left to the families themselves, it's something most people have a very strong feeling about. And what we find is it's the biggest issue that moves people who might not vote to the ballot box, and it's the biggest issue that moves people who voted Republican otherwise to vote for a Democrat in this moment, because it's a line that most Americans do not want crossed, that kind of intrusion into private life by political actors trying to, you know, please the most extreme part of their base. And that's the kind of issue that we find can really electrify voters who might otherwise feel like they don't want to think about politics all day. They don't want politicians thinking about them.
Sure. You mentioned how people are feeling the economy,
yeah.
Higher prices. We know inflation's cooling, jobless rate is low, wages are up. Those are all good signs, but President Biden doesn't seem to be getting credit for that. Trump is noted in polls as being the one who would do better on the economy. Why do you think that Americans aren't giving President Biden credit, or they're not feeling impacts of a stronger economy?
So what's interesting is there's several different polls that have asked people, do you feel like you are doing well economically, okay economically, poorly, you know, terribly? And people say they're doing well or okay in their personal lives, a majority of people. If you ask, there's a poll that looked at each of the battleground states, do you think the economy is doing well in your state? And then do you think it's doing well nationally? A majority in each state said they thought it was doing well in their state, but they thought it was doing bad nationally. So some of this is kind of news that people read over and over. Some of it's coming from Fox News. But some of it is about people's impression about how the national economy is doing that's divorced from what's happening in their lives. But the other side is prices, which, you know, people go to the grocery store multiple times a week
mortgage
in many cases.
And
mortgage rates, they fill up their gas tank. And those prices, they do experience in a visceral way. And when you earn more money, you earn that. You know, you're working hard and wages have gone up. It's easier to find a job now. And that feels often like a personal accomplishment instead of like a social accomplishment where the president has presided over this unprecedented boom of sustained low unemployment, falling inflation rates, rising wages, rising real wages even after accounting for inflation, the best economy amongst all the developed nations in the world. But often the thing you think most about is, what is the cost of eggs?
Most
and I
day-to-day.
Totally get that. And so,
you don't think the economy is a liability for the president as an issue?
I think the fundamental thing people choose between is who's going to make things better for them. So you might feel like the economy is here, but if you elect President Biden, is he going to be fighting for you, or is Trump going to be fighting for someone else? And President Biden is Scranton Joe. He's the guy who walked the picket line with UAW workers before they won record contracts. He's the person who understands what it's like to decide between groceries and fulfilling your prescription. And so he's somebody who will be on the side of the middle class. And that's an argument that we can make. And that when you poll people and ask them who cares more about people like you and who cares about your family's economic prospects, Biden actually can do very well on those questions, even though, you know, I think Trump has a kind of the afterglow of The Apprentice and
as a businessman.
As a businessman and flying his jet and the golden toilet and, you know, the jobs boom that started under Obama and continued under Trump until the terribly managed economy under the COVID pandemic when everything fell apart. I think Trump is carrying some of that afterglow that isn't so much connected to whose side is he on. It's
so
more of a general association.
Between now and November, will the job be to remind people of how President Biden would be better than Trump, even though polls right now show that that's not how they feel?
I think there's zeroing in on what does Biden want to do these next 4 years to finish the job, to fight to lower costs, bring down prices, tackle price gouging big companies, the oil companies, the pharmaceutical companies, to break up monopolies and make sure that, you know, working families can afford a decent quality of life. And on the other side, Trump's proposals would jack up prices for people. Trump just had a meeting with oil company executives and told them that if they raised $1 billion for his campaign, he would do whatever they wanted. And so if you want higher gas prices that create record profits for oil companies, then by all means, you know, go for the Trump plan. If you want to fight to bring down costs, even if it annoys some special interests, then President Biden is really the choice here.
On Thursday, there was some news. Former President Trump was found guilty of 34 counts of falsifying business records before the 2016 election. Early polls show that half of Republicans are now more likely to vote for former President Trump. And they also claim to have raised $52.8 million in that first 24 hours after the conviction. How do you think that that conviction will impact Wisconsin voters in November?
The thing that we saw in the trial was that Trump broke the law over and over, dozens of times, to cover up a crime, to cheat his way into the White House, to prevent the public from learning what had actually happened by making illegal campaign contributions. And that's a pattern, because when he was in office, he was impeached because he tried to use the presidential power to force Ukraine, an ally, to manufacture attacks on his opponent. And then he lost the election, tried to overturn the election. There are many people in jail right now for being part of that criminal insurrection. And we know from his own plan, if he wins re-election, that he wants to fire federal officials who won't bend the knee to him and break the law, do whatever it is that he wants. He wants to send in U.S. troops to crush protests if people criticize him. It actually speaks to this broad question of freedom, of whether we're a dictatorship, as he's promised to be a dictator on day one, or whether we're a democracy in this country, where everyone is bound by the same set of laws, and you compete to win the most votes based on what you want to do for the country. And that, there may be some people that are energized on the right by this. There's a much larger group of people that see that whole picture of someone who's aspiring to be a dictator and has a pattern of breaking the law to get power at the expense of the public. It does not fly for most people.
You think this conviction matters 5 months from now?
I think we're in a state where the elections come down routinely for the last six elections to less than one percentage point. And so anything that moves even a couple people one way or the other can matter. I think everything will matter in this election.
A recent Reuters Ipsos poll has the president with an approval rating of just 36%. Why do you think the president's approval ratings are so low?
What's striking with President Biden, he is not Mr. Grab the Spotlight. He's not like Donald Trump, who, you know, will bowl through people like bowling pins to find his way to a TV camera. He does the job. He does a great job. And what we find is that the more people find out about what he's done and the more people find out about what he plans to do, the more they support him. With Trump, it's the opposite. The more people find out about what Trump's plans are, the more they're horrified and they back away. In a funny way, I think President Biden's challenge in the election is to draw attention to what it is that he's actually doing and proposing to do, and to make sure the contrast is clear with President Trump. And so getting people, bringing this information to people, the debate that's going to happen in June, the work of the national conventions, both of the conventions, and then all the campaigning work that volunteers and organizers are doing through November can help to bring people's focus to the actual stakes and the effect that it's going to have on their lives of a President Biden who wants to bring down costs and protect our freedoms and our democracy versus an extremist MAGA Trump, Eric Hovde, Republican Legislative Caucus, that want to take freedoms away, rig the system so that they never lose power, and then give giant handouts to the wealthy at the expense of the middle class.
So historically, presidents who poll approval ratings in the 30s do not win elections. Is this a warning for Democrats, or you're not concerned about it at all?
Well, this is Wisconsin, so if anyone in either party thinks that they can afford to not be concerned about anything ever, they're probably making a mistake. We're, of course, working around the clock in every corner of the state. We don't take anything for granted in this election. We're also facing the most unpopular Republican national figure for a very long time. So many voters are terrified of the idea of Trump getting back into office and will work their hearts out to stop him from getting elected. So it's all of the above. And our job, as anyone who cares about democracy, and certainly people who want to make sure that President Biden earns another term and that we elect a Democratic U.S. House majority and Senate majority, you should be working every minute you possibly can between now and the election, talking to friends and family, donating, knocking on doors, and reaching out to folks, because this could be another Wisconsin nail biter. That's why the polls so often in our state are basically tied.
You mentioned abortion as a deciding issue for many voters. It certainly was one that made a huge difference in 2022, largely contributing to some major wins for Democrats. Are Democrats still counting on that issue to be the key issue, even though it's, you know, listed as kind of number three? Is it the issue? Is it important for Democrats to emphasize that as a candidate?
It's a very, very important issue for voters, which is why Democrats keep coming back to it. What we find, if you have a focus group and you ask a group of undecided voters how they feel about this, how they feel about that, and then you start talking about abortion, people will start sharing stories from their lives, some of the hardest, most challenging moments in their lives when they needed to have the option to get the care that they needed. And they are infuriated by the idea that politicians, often male politicians like Donald Trump, will appoint judges and, you know, green light these abortion bans that force people to make excruciating and impossible decisions and often go through horrible medical experiences. There's a story of a woman in Wisconsin who was denied care for 10 days while hemorrhaging until it reached the point of being life-threatening during the abortion ban period here. That is something that no one wants to see in their own lives, in their family's lives, the life of someone they love, their daughter or sibling or parent. Most people who access abortions have already had kids. People are worried about whether they'll be able to still be able to get pregnant if they don't get the care that they need when they need it. And it cuts beyond politics for so many voters. This is why it's the kind of issue that if you're someone who's just fed up with the whole system, you're disgusted with both sides, you might still vote because of this issue. And that's why I think you're going to hear a lot about it in this election season, because it reaches outside the usual realm of, you know, should tax rates be lower for the middle class or the rich, or, you know, these kinds of debates that we always have. This is really a question of freedom that touches people in a very personal place.
On the convention website, it talks about what delegates do at convention. In one part, it says delegates will help shape our party's policy priorities by voting on constitutional amendments, our party platform, and resolutions. Are there any issues you expect will come up as proposed changes or resolutions?
There's always a raft of resolutions that come through. We have county parties and then congressional district conventions that vote through resolutions. So there's a whole bunch that then go to our platform and resolutions committee. They make determinations. You'll hear about things around school funding and around prescription drug costs. Many of the things that are at the forefront of voters' minds now, I'm sure, will be present in the resolution process.
There seems like there's a lot of discontent in the party over President Biden's position on Israel and the war in Gaza. Do you anticipate that issue will come forward as a resolution or be part of discussion at convention?
There are, I think, three different resolutions related to that. I'm sure there will be a robust and respectful conversation. And I also know President Biden just laid out this plan from folks in the Israeli government that he's now calling on Hamas to agree to for a ceasefire, the return of hostages, a path to the permanent cessation of hostilities. That's what most Democrats want. It's what most Americans want. It's an end to the war, hostages to go home, and ultimately a path towards a two-state solution. So I think I know the president's working around the clock to bring an end to the really wrenching tragedy we see.
Bring some of those discontented voters back.
It can bring people together.
WisPolitics has been reporting on fundraising efforts of both parties. The GOP reported at the end of April just over $650,000 cash in hand, while Democrats have nearly $2.3 million. So I need to ask you, what's your secret?
It's interesting. One of the big differences between Republican fundraising and Democratic fundraising, when you donate to a political party, it's disclosed. It's publicly available who the donor is, how much they donated. A lot of the money on the Republican side, if you're watching TV ads, it's from group after group that you've never heard of. It's called dark money. And a flood of dark money comes into our state on the Republican side every election cycle. We saw this in 2022. There was a $29 million blitz of dark money ads against Mandela Barnes in the Senate race. That was funded, it's now clear, by two mega deca-billionaires, the Dick and Liz Uline and Diane Hendricks, who poured money into this one thing to help Ron Johnson win his election. On our side, there's a much greater share that is disclosed donations. And when I'm fundraising, I make the case to people that the entire country could depend on what happens in Wisconsin, that voters in Wisconsin have this, it's almost like a superpower with their ballots to tip the Electoral College one way or the other, and by reelecting Tammy Baldwin to help determine the Senate majority, and in multiple House districts to help determine the House majority, and then now we have the state legislative races. And that's a compelling case for donors that care about the future of democracy.
Chairman Schumming says all but 3% of the money for Democrats comes from out of state. How do you talk about the balance between in-state donations and out-of-state money?
Well, we have far more donors in Wisconsin than we have in any other state in the country. The national donors who focus on Wisconsin are doing so because they care about the fate of democracy writ large. And what I see on the Republican side is a handful of donors, some who've benefited from special tax breaks that they get for their businesses, and then others who were involved in funding the effort to overturn the election. And for me, it's profoundly concerning to have folks like Dick and Liz Uline, who poured $3 million into Stop the Steal, the protest that turned into the insurrection in Washington, D.C., as the biggest backers of Republican politics in Wisconsin. And I think the GOP really should look in the mirror and ask whether they want funding from people who would like to make elections irrelevant so that Trump could just hold on to power even if he loses the vote of the people of Wisconsin and across the country.
Polls have been showing that Democrats are slipping, or President Biden is slipping in the polls with black and Hispanic voters. President Biden launched an effort last week targeting black voters. Congresswoman Gwen Moore and local leaders in Milwaukee also announced a new statewide organizing campaign targeting black voters. How critical is the black vote to a win for President Biden in Wisconsin?
Wisconsin is the land of the nail biter. So it's a pretty white state. If you look at the demographics of Wisconsin, something like 90% of voters in a lot of elections are white. And at the same time, the 3 to 5% of voters that are black absolutely make up multiple times over the margin of victory for a presidential election, for a Senate race, for a governor's race. And so every community winds up being absolutely essential. And that's why the 50 black leaders who endorsed President Biden and Vice President Harris last week, their announcement is critical. The organizing work, we have a year-round engagement program through the Democratic Party of Wisconsin and now the Biden campaign, a whole bunch of different ways that we make sure that the voters are hearing from leaders in their own community, from volunteers and canvassers and folks who they have connected lived experience with, that is essential, and that voters are heard, that their concerns are heard and taken seriously. It's a two-way street. And for Democrats to earn support from voters, we have to show up and show that we're responsive to the issues that they care the most about.
Are you concerned that Republicans are making inroads with those groups and that they'll have a leg up with the national convention being in Milwaukee?
So what's striking to me is that while there are, I know, many black voters and many white voters and Latino voters who are thinking about who they want to support, who are thinking, Biden or Trump or a third party or whether to vote at all, it's also striking how much contempt you see from the Republican Party that has closed their community engagement centers, closed their Milwaukee offices, that has really shut down programs that they were using to proactively reach out to black and Latino voters in Milwaukee in particular. And I don't see a lot of genuine outreach or connection or responsiveness to the policy concerns that people have. Voters are concerned about whether the political system can deliver for them, and I think for Democrats it's on us to show that we're responsive to their concerns and we can really do the job. I also think there's a striking contrast with a Republican Party. Donald Trump gave this speech where he laid out that he thinks he'll do well with black voters because he's in court and because he's been indicted for crimes. And it is one of the most patronizing and infuriating things I've ever seen. Of course, this is someone armored with tens of millions of dollars of legal representation, the best that a Trump money can buy. He lives in a different world than voters of all races across the country. But I'm not seeing an on-the-ground level of engagement. And that doesn't mean Democrats have it in the bag. It means if we work our tails off and show up everywhere all the time, we have a shot at winning.
Senator Tammy Baldwin leads Eric Hovde in major polls, but there's still 5.5 months to go. What does Senator Baldwin need to do to win this race?
Senator Baldwin is a champion for Wisconsin families across the political spectrum. She's the leader of Buy America policies. She wrote the policy to bring down the cost of insulin for people on Medicare, to $35 a month. She's the reason why people up to age 26 can stay on their parents' health insurance. Bill after bill after bill that she's passed through the Senate, signed into law by different presidents, has made a difference in Wisconsinites' lives. And part of her success is that she goes everywhere across our state, she talks to people, she connects with them, hears their concerns, and then turns that into legislation. Her job is to keep showing up, to keep communicating about all that, and draw contrast with Eric Hovde, who, for everyone who's benefited from Tammy Baldwin's leadership, Eric Hovde has said something really condescending about that group. Seniors in nursing homes, I think, is a great example. Eric Hovde has said that most people in nursing homes don't have the mental capacity to vote. They only have 6 to 9 months to live. They're not at a point to vote. He was asked about this. He doubled down on it repeatedly. His bank invested in a nursing home that's now being sued for wrongful death and elder abuse and negligence. And you see the same thing, a kind of a pattern with young people. He says that they don't have the same morals and ethics or they don't have the same work ethic that older people do. He said single parents don't have morals and ethics. That's the line.
Is this going to be an easy win for Tammy?
I mean, the more people find out about Eric Hovde, the better Tammy Baldwin is going to do. And the more they find out about Tammy, the better she'll do. So that means that as we get closer to the election, we have a chance to grow the margin of victory. But Eric Hovde is the wealthiest Senate candidate we've seen in some time in our state. He's talking about spending $50 million on his Senate race, and tens of millions of dollars of his money can go a long way.
That's why he's a threat.
It's why we have to take the race seriously.
The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee announced last Wednesday that they will be investing in the first congressional race between Peter Barca and Brian Stile. How will that make a difference in that race?
I'm so excited that in the first congressional district, voters will have a vivid choice between a proven leader in Peter Barca and a proven misleader in Brian Stile, somebody who, for example, voted against the January 6th Commission to find out what happened in the criminal insurrection, who's supported the most extreme anti-abortion forces within the Republican ecosystem. I think this is going to be the kind of race that could turn a lot of heads, because people have thought of southeastern Wisconsin as conservative, when in fact, if you look at the numbers in the way the congressional district's drawn now, this is kind of a toss-up seat. And I think that will increase turnout in ways that will help President Biden and help state legislative candidates and Tammy Baldwin, and also mean that Peter Barca could very well defeat incumbent Brian Stile and help shift Wisconsin's congressional delegation. We're a 50-50 state. Right now, it's 6 Republicans, 2 Democrats. I think we could flip at least 2 seats this year. And this is one of them.
The third congressional as well?
The third as well. The third
now,
is.
The National Committee is not funding that third congressional district between Derek Van Orden and whoever the Democratic candidate is. That was kind of seen as a mistake to not focus more on that race in 2022.
That's because we have a primary on August 13th. So they added the first congressional district. It's pretty clear
what
we're like to see. Filing deadline is today. So we'll
you anticipate they might weigh in on that seat too?
On the third congressional district, my hope and I would say expectation is that by the time we get past Labor Day, we're in the fall, in the home stretch, we are on the map for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. And I will be publicly advocating for them to do that. Because if you look at 2022, this was a district where we had a great candidate, Brad Paff, running for Congress. And the National Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee focused only on defending incumbents. But it was an open seat at that point. So we lost by 3.4 percentage points.
Was that a mistake?
It was a mistake. I think the National Party should have invested in that race. And if they had, I think that Derek Van Orden would have lost. When people find out that he was at the insurrection on January 6th on Capitol grounds, watching the whole thing go down, when they find out that he's bragged about sexually harassing people under his when he was in the military, and when they hear about his screaming matches at teenagers multiple times in a library here in Wisconsin, in Washington D.C. with Senate pages, he doesn't have the temperament or character that you want to see in a congressional representative from Wisconsin. When people learn about that stuff, they're looking for alternatives. And this time we'll have an alternative to lay out for them, and I hope the National Democrats help present that alternative to voters.
In early May, you talked about new party efforts to target Republicans on the state legislature's
yes.
Joint Finance Committee. How are those races maybe looking different because of the new maps?
So we've been a state where no matter what voters wanted, since the gerrymander came in 2011, we knew in advance who would have the majority in both state legislative chambers. It was essentially etched in political stone. But now with fair maps, it is genuinely up for grabs. The state assembly could switch hands this election cycle and the state senate over 2 election cycles. Whoever wins the most votes is likely to become the party with the majority. And you zero in on individual state legislative races, and this becomes very vivid. Let's take the 14th Senate District. You have Sarah Kayeski running against Joan Baalweg. And in that race, Joan Baalweg's on the Joint Finance Committee, has supported these refusal to invest in cleaning up forever chemicals from our drinking water, has refused to take action even about the Richland Center campus of the University of Wisconsin that's closed because of the lack of funding. And Sarah Kayeski is fighting for something better. And these issues resonate with voters. They always have. But now the voters can actually do something about it. It's not rigged. And that means I think we're going to have a higher level of engagement and interest in these issues and higher turnout and a real path to victory.
Would you say the Baalweg seat is the one that's most likely to flip?
Oh, I think we could flip multiple. I think we could flip 4 Senate seats in this election. That would take Democrats from 11 seats to 15 seats in 1 year, breaking the Republican supermajority, putting them on track to win a majority in 2026. In the state assembly, it's much more than that. We are currently 35 out of the 99 seats. If Democrats win 15 seats, they get a 50-seat majority in the state assembly, and we're fighting for at least that number. So I'm very, very excited about
what's
happening.
Chairman Schumann was here a few weeks ago. He says this will be the first election where Democrats can't blame the maps for their losses. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take that. And Republicans can't pretend that it's something other than the maps that has kept them in power. They've lost the majority of votes for the state assembly in 2012 and in 2018 and walked away with massive victories both times. This time, if Democrats win the vast majority of the votes, they'll get the majority, and that's how a democracy is supposed to work.
I call it a fair fight. I have to ask you a question about the national convention. Democrats learned earlier this month that due to a law in Ohio, they needed to certify Biden as their candidate by August 7th to make the Ohio ballot, but the convention kicks off on August 19th. Do you see that as kind of sucking some air out of the room at convention because Biden will be nominated virtually?
It's a technical issue to correct for really a kind of case study in Republican aversion to democracy. It's been a routine matter in Ohio with their laws that they create a waiver to allow the nominees to be selected at the convention. And this time, Republicans refused to do it unless they could tack on different measures to attack democracy in the bill that would have done the thing that's happened under both parties many times in the past.
So no impact on energy at convention.
I think this convention will be full of energy. And we can see with all the people who ran for delegate, one of the things we'll do at our state party convention is officially confirm the delegate slate for our national convention. I'm getting text messages from all kinds of people who are so excited about this. And I cannot wait to go to the national convention and cheer on our nominees up and down the ballot.
Well, last question for you. I know you're very, very busy. What will a typical day look like for you going toward November?
Oh, man. Well, yesterday it was a very beautiful day. So in the morning, I was out on Lake Wingrove with my kids. And then I went over to Waukesha County to knock on doors and collect signatures for a candidate in the 97th Assembly District. Today, I'm here with you. I'll do fundraising. I'll be having strategy meetings with my team, checking in what's happening with the filing deadlines happening. And every day will bring a new challenge and a new opportunity. I'll be zigzagging all over the state of Wisconsin and trying to make the case to the country that all eyes should turn to the Badger State, because what happens here will really shape the future of American democracy.
Well, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Lisa.
And thank you to our viewers. And be sure to tune in and watch the Democratic Convention live on Wisconsin Eye. You can find our schedule page for streaming details. Thank you for joining us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.